Do you know what like turnover of employees in retail is, the retail industries? High double digits. It's like some retail companies can lose 100% of their employees a year. They're just churning, churning, churning. Do you know what Costco's is?
I'm assuming less.
Like 7%.
Why?
Because they're so radically employee-centric.
They say teamwork makes the dream work. And for businesses in the modern AI era, we have entered a new generation of how those teams and employees are built, managed, and employed. We are officially in the future of work, so it's more important than ever that leadership across the C-suite is aligned as to how to organize their teams, their AI solutions, and how those functions can and should be interacting to ultimately inspire and empower employees. Today, I'm thrilled to welcome Managing Director and Senior Partner, Future of Work Fellow at the Boston Consulting Group, Henderson Institute, Debbie Lovitch. Debbie, welcome to AI in Action.
Thanks for having me.
All right, so let's start with something that I know you've spoken on before. We're in the Gen AI era, right? We have all become obsessed with productivity. We want to work faster. We want to work better. So from the outset, how should employers and HR pros think about measuring, obtaining, and achieving productivity in the workforce?
Well, they shouldn't. As soon as you talk about generative AI as a productivity tool alone, it's telling employees not to adopt it, right? So if you're sitting at work and you're like, okay, here I have this new tool for you, and they're worried, they have to learn something new. Human beings love mastery. So you're going to take away my mastery, maybe even take away my identity, because that's how I define myself. They're going to be worried they might lose their job. And they're going to be worried at the end of the day, if you adopt all these tools, they're going to be asked to do more with less, right? And so one of the things I talk a lot about is when you talk about this super exciting technology that really is transformational, you need to talk about it as it will drive productivity, but it also has an opportunity to make work better for the employees. Like, think about all the annoying tasks, those things that we call toil that like just sucks your will. If we could point Gen AI at that and then leave you with the stuff that gives you joy and energy and sense of learning and accomplishment, that's how you should talk about Gen AI. And so you could tell like I'm on a little bit of a soapbox, but it's we're shouting from the rooftops, productivity, productivity, productivity. That's also shouting to many employees, I don't want to touch this stuff.
Calling it productivity is really talking to that C-suite rather than talking to the actual employees. But like you said, if you have toil in your job, like for me, it's emails. Like I don't want to write emails ever. But
yeah,
if you could point it and have an excellent email written for me, like this is stuff that I have used in my day-to-day, that's unbelievable. And you see that continuing that path. But there's going to be productivity tools. What would you call it if not productivity tools?
Making work better.
Making work better tools.
Making work work.
Because you want to make the employees happy. So you have to articulate this to the C-suite.
Yeah, exactly. Like and when I say making work work, it works better for the C-suite who are really representing the shareholders, right? So shareholders want productivity. Making work work for customers, it could deliver more innovation, better experiences, richer customization, personalization. But it also has to make work work better for employees, more joy, less toil in day-to-day work, right? And so you have to think about it holistically. And it's not just think about it, it's not just marketing. How am I going to market this Gen AI stuff to my people? You have to approach it that way. So you have to say, okay, we're going to bring this technology in to transform what we do, and we're going to do it in a way that actually does make your work work better. And if you do that, you'll be happier. Like, so for you, it's emails.
Yeah.
Someone else might love emails, right? One person's toil is another person's joy. Maybe I'm a great email writer. You know, I don't know. You have to approach it that way. So you have to say, okay, we're going to bring this technology in to transform what we do, and we're going to do it in a way that actually does make your work work better. As all your email for you, you might miss the couple that maybe you wanted to reply to. So you have to be careful and be radically employee-centric in how you approach bringing these tools in.
So a lot of the times, like employees are going to have this toil that's not really visible to that C-suite. They're going to have this stuff that they do that can be improved by Gen AI. How would you go about evaluating or even asking these employees, like, what can we do to make your day better using this tool? Like, how would you go about asking?
Because
exactly it's a difficult question, right?
Yeah, no, exactly that. So one of the things we do is we developed a survey instrument that we ask employees to, if you say, hey, listen, we're bringing this technology, we want to rethink your work in ways to make it more efficient for shareholders, more effective for customers, and more enjoyable for you. But we need some data to do that. So what we ask employees to do is we say, just look at your calendar from last week. And we give them a, you know, a set of tasks. So for office workers, it's like focus work, administrative work, collaborative work, learning and development. Like, just what do you do during your day? For a salesperson, it's different. For an engineer, it's different. So you just take the basic 5 to 10 tasks. And we say, look at your calendar and just how much time did you spend on each of them? And then for each of those tasks, we ask them, you know, on a scale of 1 to 5, right, or something, how much do you enjoy those tasks? And if you don't enjoy them, why not? And we also ask them, how effective are you at those tasks? And efficient and effective. And if you're not efficient and effective, why not? And then you could use that data to say, okay, where's the win-win? Where's the stuff that sucks their soul that you should point AI at first? And where's the stuff that gives them joy that you should be very careful not to point technology at? So should I give you an example?
Please.
So we did this with our own administrative staff at BCG. We were rolling out all these Gen AI tools to help them. And it turned out we had 3 very different types of admin staff. You know, like when you do customer work, you have customer segments, right? If you're in Starbucks, you have the people who come for mobile orders, they just want to get in and out. There are people who think it's a WeWork, and there are people who think it's like a coffee clutch social. So Starbucks has to be able to fit those. Same when we're rolling Gen AI out to our administrative staff, we found we had 3 very different versions of admins. We had what we called the lifers. They just want to be an admin forever, right? They just want to be the magician behind the curtain, don't take credit, take pride. They love their job. We had the launchers who, they actually became an admin at BCG to get a job at BCG, but they want to get into another part of the organization. This is a learning opportunity for them. And then we had the leavers, and they're, thank God, a small segment, but they're the people, it's just a job, they could take it or leave it. And you could size those segments, just like you size your customer segments, right? So we're lucky to have, I think, 40% lifers and 50% launchers and 10% leavers. What does this have to do with Gen AI? Well, the launchers are like, they want to get another job at BCG. They want to learn how to use technology for everything. Have at it. The lifers are like, wait, this is my job. This is my identity. Don't touch me with this, right? And they're worried that they're going to be automated away. So we had to be really careful in how we rolled it out. So there was a calendaring tool. And again, the launchers, they could take away calendaring. The lifers, they love landing the big meetings, right? We're consultants, you have senior partners and you have clients, and how do you match the calendars and make it all work? That's like Tetris for them. They love it, but they hated checking calendar availability, just that grunt work of getting everyone's calendar. So we had to tweak the tools to not take away the Tetris, but take away checking everyone's availability. So again, if we just rolled it out the same to everyone, there would be a revolt. They wouldn't use it.
Wait, you had different rollouts for the different segments?
Different adjustments to the tools, right? Like the launchers will use it for everything. The lifers, like you say, you could adjust it. Okay, it can check availability. It could land the meeting. What do you need it for? And there are so many stories like this. I've heard stories of customer service agents, and you could automate all of that stuff, right? So this company, for productivity, rolled out Gen AI to help take all the calls, but still some calls are really difficult. And so they kept the best of the best customer service agents. And then when they rolled it out, guess what? The best of the best started quitting. Why? Because they were dealing with the most difficult calls. They didn't become a customer service agent to be yelled at all day and to have problems they can't solve. They're pleasers, right? Like, you want the feedback, I make the customer happy. So they had to change the algorithms so that they routed some easy calls to the employees that are left. So this whole understanding, unless your whole company is going to be automated away and you don't need humans, you have to understand what humans really need in the workplace to thrive. And it's not just like a social good, like if they quit, if they're not motivated anymore, right? It's a business. Like, it could be theoretically productive, but then you lose all your best people. What does that do to productivity?
When you found these segments, you found that through the survey, like you were able to differentiate, okay, these are the people who just love what they do. And these are the people that look at this as a launch pad. Were you able, like, or did you have to have like a pre-survey in order to...
Yeah, it's just like customer research. You do qualitative and you do quantitative. You talk to people about their attitudes towards work. What do they love? What do they hate? What does work mean in their lives? And you get some theories and then you test that in the quantitative work. It is no different than doing customer work. And in fact, one of the things I talk a lot about is this radical employee centricity, right? Like every company, even be outside of Gen AI, needs to be more employee-centric, and I could talk about why and all of that. And so the way to be employee-centric is just to take all your customer capabilities, discovery, design thinking, journeys, personalization, and turn those people onto your employees. And you may learn some, as I say in Boston, wicked cool things.
The really interesting part is that I'm a seller. Well, I'm an engineer who sells. And a lot of the times they're just talking about, okay, mean time to resolution. We have this problem. How quickly can we get this resolved? And this is the tool that to do it. We could prove it out. But a lot of times they're not considering the people who are doing this work. And that's genuinely fascinating because there's probably stuff I do that would be grunt work that people would hate that I just have this absolute joy with. And having that automated away from me would hurt not only my ego, but it would hurt my enjoyment. I wouldn't enjoy my work as much as I do now. And I don't know, this is really very interesting because I wouldn't have thought that this is the way to roll out these tools. Like I would never have thought it, like, let's look at the employees. Like not just look at the mean time to resolution, not just the hard numbers. Let's look at like the soft stuff.
I'll give you an example in your world. So we did some work with engineers.
Okay.
Rolling out Gen AI tools to help them with coding. We surveyed the engineers and we said, how many of you are excited about using Gen AI? 80%.
Yeah, of course.
Excited. We rolled out the tools, or we, not the client, rolled out the tools. How many had logged in even once?
Not 80%?
25%.
So it's just like, theoretically, I'm excited about this tool?
I'm excited about Gen AI, but exactly what you said, like, is this going to take away the parts of the job I like? So when you dig into it, and we've sort of developed what I call the Gen AI checklist, adoption checklist, because the problem's not getting the technology to work in ways that could speed whatever it is you're trying to speed. The technology could do it, but the adoption's the problem. And so our adoption checklist has on it a couple of things. One is you have to make sure the manager of the employees that you want to adopt these tools is using it, loves it, and talks about it great. We find from our data, from our research, that when a team has a manager who does those things, the adoption triples. A manager who uses it themselves, don't do what I say, do what I do, and loves it and explains the why that we're doing this, all that, three times the adoption. The second thing you need to do is you need to do the joy and toil work and the segmentation. You need to understand the employees. Right. And the other thing in this second thing, this is what I call being employee centric. Right. You have to understand where the joy and toil comes from and how it differs across, right, my launchers and leavers. But you also have to co-create with them how to apply it. Right. So when we rolled out generative AI in our own organization, we had a control group and a regular group. The control group got the tools rolled out the standard way. Here's the tool. Here's the training. Go forth. The other group, the experimental group, we had co-creation sessions. And in those co-creation sessions, we shared back their data on joy and toil. Here's how you answered, you know, where you spend your time, and how would you apply these tools? And that's where you learn things like, I don't want it to solve the meeting for me. I want it to solve the meeting for me, right? And how do you do it in a way that will maximize your productivity and your enjoyment of work, right? It's not joy for joy's sake, right? People should enjoy their work. The world would be a better place if we enjoyed what we did most of our waking hours during the week. But for an organization, joy is important because people enjoy their work, and I have data to prove this, are 55% less likely to be looking for a new job. So if you care about retention of your best people, we ask this question when we do this work with organizations. We ask employees, how often do you come to work like excited to give your all? People enjoy their work. We've seen 2 to 4x. So if you think about motivation, enjoyment matters, right? So we gave the teams the data on their joy and their toil. And we say, how do you create applications of this, and that's about being really employee-centric. Get the data and co-create. The third thing you need to do to drive adoption, back to get from that 25% to the 80%, you need to provide space and time for them to learn, right? And so with this team, the 25% even logged in once compared to 80% wanted to use it. When the managers went and said, I don't understand your same question, 80%, not 80%, it was, well, our backlog's huge. We don't have time to learn how to use it and to learn to trust it, right? So you need to give us the time. And the CIO said, whoa, okay, next month, I'm deleting all your backlog. It was December. It was the end of year. So I'm deleting your backlog, and you could rotate the deleting the backlog. And your only goal, all your backlog for this month, is to learn how to use it. And that's like performance management. You like, if I'm being measured on something and you're telling me I have to use this, I can't go back and take the time to learn. And so you've got to give the time to learn. So those are the three things on the adoption checklist. Leaders have to use it and love it and talk about the why. You need to be wicked employee-centric in how you do it, both with the data and the co-creation. And the third is you have to give the time and space for people to learn and still deliver for their jobs.
You mentioned that, okay, you have leadership start using the tool and saying, okay, I love this, but who is the steward? Who is the person who ensures that, like in an organization that would ensure this AI readiness?
Has to come from the top.
From the top?
It has to come from the top. And I could talk forever, and I know that's not the subject of this podcast, about return to office and flexible work. Even in companies where they said, okay, you could work hybrid, if the leaders come to work every day, because they have great big offices and secretaries and say their spouse doesn't want them at home or whatever, they come up with it. But if they come into the office every day, people don't believe they're allowed to work remotely, right? So the leaders have to role model how they want people to work. And it's one of the agile principles as a leader, go to the work. Go to the Jira backlog and play around and see what they're doing, right? Go to the tools they're using, engage with them, use it yourself, talk about how you use it, right? I'm trying to use this stuff myself, right? And I'm struggling through it and learning, and I see how much it takes to learn, and then I'll be more patient as a leader with my teams.
I get it, like on a, like an intrinsic level. I get if I saw my manager, if I saw Arvind, if someone using a tool that they're asking me to learn, and they're like the struggle is interesting. Like see them actually struggle something that I have to struggle to learn is that would be compelling for me. Be like, okay, it's not just me. You know, that's like the imposter syndrome. Like you don't want to say that you're having a hard time.
And exactly. But if I, as the senior person, says I'm having a hard time,
and I'm learning,
yeah. Right?
Do you see the return on investment when you're employee centric?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And can I give you like a little historical context?
Please.
On employee centricity? I'm old enough to have started working in the late 80s. And the late 80s, everything was around shareholder return, right? More money for shareholders. And that's what the senior executives are maximizing. People would talk about making customers happy, but they're like, we can't afford that. We can't afford that because if we give more features and more service, it'll eat into shareholder returns. Well, around the 2000s, people started proving that wrong. And the tech industry really dove into that and showed how customer obsession, right? Empty seat at the table, Amazon customer at the table, Microsoft's customer obsession, right? Putting the customer at the center yielded so much profitability, right? So in fact, the most valuable companies in the world by market cap in the 80s and 90s were all the industrial companies like car companies, oil and gas, that invested in assets and got the cost down. They couldn't afford to make the customers happy. Now they're replaced with the most valuable companies in the world being all the tech companies that put customer first, right? And everyone else, the industrialists, are trying to catch up. What I think we're on the precipice of is saying, wait a minute, shareholders first and customers first, but we still treat employees as a means to an end to deliver for the shareholder and the customer. Productivity, productivity, productivity. But I believe that if you elevate employees, who, as I said earlier, are customers who choose every day how much energy to bring to work, if you elevate them and their enjoyment of work, yes, joy, not engagement, joy is a real word. If you elevate them to be as important as your shareholders and customers, it will drive more profitability. And it's not just theory. There's company after company after company that proves this out. Like, do you shop at Costco?
Sure.
Do you know what like turnover of employees in retail is, the retail industries?
No.
high double digits, right? It's like some retail companies can lose 100% of their employees a year. They're just churning, churning, churning. Do you know what Costco's is?
I'm assuming less.
Like 7%.
Why?
Because they're so radically employee-centric in what they do and how they do it. And people love working there. And when you love working there, can you imagine if you reduced your employee turnover to 7% and your employees love their work every day? I mean, go into a Trader Joe's. Everyone loves working there.
That is true.
Costco, Trader Joe's, higher sales per square foot, higher sales per employee than any of their competitors. And they do things like overstaff the store so people are not as stressed, right? So they're doing things that on paper look more costly, but they're employee-centric. So this applies not just in retail, right? But to engineers. Imagine if you could reduce the attrition of your best people, you just lose productivity in ramping up new employees. And you could double, triple, quadruple the motivation of everyone who comes to work and says, I am ready to deliver today with joy and enthusiasm and motivation and inspiration, what that does to profitability. So it's not just some like Debbie theory, it is proven out in many companies who have the courage to be radically employee-centric. And I think it's going to take on steam just like customer centricity took on steam in the 2000s.
Do you think there's going to be like a vanguard company that goes first and says, we're proving this out. Our employees are happy. Look at our shareholders. They're also happy.
Yeah, I mean, there are already, right? In retail, for sure. I mean, yeah, I do think those who leap into this employee-centric, not at the cost of customer and shareholder centricity, but in addition to.
Do you see like Gen AI as like maybe the kick in the butt that companies might need to help get their employees to a level of happiness that would be beneficial to them?
Absolutely. So Gen AI is here, right? It is here that, as you said in your intro, David, it's the future of work. It is here. But I think organizations are at a crossroads of how they implement it. And it could implement in this shoving productivity on you. I'm going to expect more. What? You don't need the teams. I could cut your budget requests in half because now you have technology teammates. It could be done that way. Or it could be done in an employee-centric, let's work together to take the toil out of the work, to understand it. And that, by just taking the toil out, will drive productivity. Back in that survey I did with our own staff, and actually we found this across organizations, office employees spend about a third of their time on soul-sucking admin work. They hate it. They hate it. Now, the definition of what is soul-sucking or not, right, may vary by segment. But if you could cut out a third of time, how do you redeploy that? That's productivity. Yeah, but it's also joy. I love work now because I could avoid the stuff I hate. So that's where Gen AI really has the promise.
You could look at people who they roll out these tools and be, okay, you have to be more productive now, not taking into consideration anything the employee wants, any of their happiness, and it could have the total opposite effect if it's not implemented properly. Like you said, like, okay, you're taking away the stuff I like to do. Also, this looks like I could do a lot of the work that I do currently, and now I'm a little bit nervous, and I don't know my future, and it becomes really... There's stuff there. It's such a powerful tool, and I do find it absolutely fascinating that if you go employee first, that this might actually help roll out these productivity tools.
100%, and it becomes this virtuous cycle, right? Employees are smart. You could roll out the tools, and they could pretend to adopt them, but they're really doing it the old way, right? That's counterproductive. That will end up costing you more. And that happens with technology and all other ways. If employees don't want to do it, you know, yelling louder doesn't help them get there.
We know that AI is here. We know that Gen AI is incredibly powerful. It is going to affect efficiency and productivity of the existing teams, and that will affect staffing. So how do you stay employee-centric when you look at a reality like this?
So first of all, employee-centricity doesn't mean full employment for everyone. You know, organizations have gone through transformations over the years that requires cutting employees, right? It does. It's just a reality. If you're a growth company and you're using it to grow, you could get around laying off employees and staffing, right? But let's call it what it is. It isn't like if these tools are deployed in a way that delivers joy for employees, you won't need as many employees. You got to be honest about that. You got to be upfront about it. and you need to invest in helping people learn and grow. It will change the nature of jobs, right? Like, I always joke, again, I'm old enough that when I started using Excel, I had to program dialogue boxes. I had to learn how to program. I'm not a programmer. I'm a liberal arts person, okay? I had to learn to program dialogue boxes for, like, entry. Who does that anymore? So that's a skill that is no longer useful. You could tell I was very proud of that skill. But that's a skill I don't need anymore. So there will be skills that employees don't need anymore, and there will be new skills they need. And we need to help the people who stay in the company learn those skills, grow. We need to help the people that, unfortunately, there may not be a place for, find new roles elsewhere. We have to do it with honesty and humanity and heart. And I think governments actually need to, and as an organization, we do a lot of work with governments to reskill people to enter a more digitally enabled workforce. And so that's just a reality. I mean, just look at what automation's done in the world, right? There are so many old jobs that don't exist anymore. We're going through that shift. That doesn't mean you can't be employee-centric.
In like a traditional organization, you have managers. And a lot of the stuff that they do is just really like soft skills. Like they're making sure, okay, my team is happy. They have the work that they need to do. Now that we have this Gen AI tools rolling out, do you see it evolving? Do you see it changing? Or how does it work now for managers in particular?
Yeah, it definitely will change, right? Like the allocating the work, the overseeing the work, like all that stuff will be more seamless. Managers will need to get more skilled, more strategic. They'll need to think ahead more, right? Okay, so where are we going? Where do we go next, right? So their strategic skills as a manager need to be increased. They still need to do the quality control. Like we still need to make sure, and as someone who's playing with Gen AI myself a lot, there's a lot of quality control that needs to happen, right? And so you still, back to what I said earlier, managers have to use the tools too. So they need to help with the quality control piece of it. So it's almost like they have to propel forward in their sort of strategic thinking and planning thinking and visionary stuff, what a lot of managers think is the fun stuff, right? And if that's toil for you, it has implications. But you also need to be enough in the weeds of what your team is doing with Gen AI that you can make sure it's working really well. And if it's not working well, help the teams address that.
I love my manager. Like I do love him. He's great. And the big thing about it for me is that he is very aware of my happiness. He wants to make sure I'm happy. I'm doing a lot of stuff outside of my role. And he wants to make sure that I'm never overworked, but he also has all that other stuff that he has to do, like you said, like managing teams, ensuring that the projects are being run correctly. And I feel like if you actually implement a tool like Gen AI for him,
100%.
He would have more time to do what I think is the most effective aspect of his managerial style, which is genuinely just making sure I'm okay. And it's an amazing place to work in for me. All right, so the modern age of business, is it, you have to use Gen AI. Do you just see that as like just a cost of doing business? Gen AI is going to be a part of your workflow on every level.
Yeah, I think it's the same way we use Excel and PowerPoint and cell phones. It's just part of the world we interact with today, and it could be a very good and powerful part.
So if there are any leaders listening, is there something that they should say or that they should do to try to like address disruption and uncertainty with these tools? Because those exist as an undercurrent on all levels.
There is a big gap, and we know we have data on this, between executives who say Gen AI is critically important to their organization and organizations that are actually implementing it. I think, you know, there's a world of small, startup-y companies that are being Gen AI first. Then there's the big old behemoths. Everyone agrees it's important. Everyone talks about it as a leadership team, but there's slower, more cautious movement. And so that caution is good, but you gotta dive in. You gotta dive in, it's here. And I've even seen organizations where it's really frustrating to the employees because they're using it in their personal life and they're not using it in their work life. And that's not new. It is easier to get a mortgage approved than it is to apply for a new job within an organization, right? We've had that digital dichotomy of what you experience as a consumer and what you experience as an employee. But organizations need to close that gap. And that's where my employee centricity, again, not alone, customer centricity, productivity centricity, and employee centricity, and dive in.
So what does an ideal AI-enabled organization look like?
Well, that's the kabillion-dollar question. You know, there are different discussions and debate. You know, from a productivity alone standpoint, you could look at exactly the jobs and see how much AI and Gen AI and agentic AI can do for you, right? The data's there. Is that ideal? Well, if you still need humans in the organization and you need them to be motivated and happy, maybe the theoretical potential productivity that technology could do is there. So we know that these tasks could be done. The question is it like every human has an agent, every human works with technology, or is it every team has technology on the team, and some people are starting to put technology on org charts? And that's like an excuse to, for sure, to say, okay, like employees think, oh, that's an excuse not to give me budget for more people. Right? So you have to do it the right way. Co-create with your teams. Others say, well, maybe technology is like all the shared services, HR and finance and whatever, right? All the shared services become mostly technology, right? There's a lot these technologies could do. Just take HR, applying for and getting a job and talent searching and all that. There's a lot that technologies can do there. So I think the jury's still out of this, you know, is it a pair? Is it a team? Is it a platform? Or is it all three? My message about employee centricity is don't impose that model on your organization. Create that model with it. Get in and see what it could do, and then reimagine work with your best people, because then you're building an organization that you will have humans that they will be super excited to be a part of and bring their all every day and continue to innovate, and it will continue to evolve. And the only thing that's true, right, because I go back to I used to code dialogue boxes and not have a cell phone and started work before the internet, that these changes that, yes, we went through them in the past, they're much faster and they're much more pronounced.
It sounds like it's an organic adoption approach, and especially almost like bottom up.
It's a bottom up and top down iteration. You need to know what the technologies can do to vision, but you better do those visions with your best people from the bottom, because they could tell you the reality. Then they need to start working with it, and then they could come up with more visions. And it's, in some ways, I think to get it right, you need to collapse the hierarchy and, you know, get people out of conference rooms and hotels and out with employees, watching how it's used, seeing how it's used, talking to people. And I think if you collapse that hierarchy, you can together co-create a really amazing organization that delivers for all three constituencies.
Honestly, this has been so awesome. Thank you so much for spending time with me today.
Oh, thank you for having me and letting me share. You could tell I'm a little bit on a soapbox.
I don't, honestly. You're talking for me. Like, honestly, that's what it is. So I really appreciate it.
No, my pleasure. Thank you.
To all of you, what do you think the future of work holds? Please leave us a comment with your experience and make sure to follow us on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, or wherever else you're getting this podcast. We'll see you soon.